Part 1. The Mouse. Chapter 1. Mouse awoke in the dark, shivering in the crisp, damp chill that came only an hour or so before dawn along the coast of Falinor. Fragments of his dream drifted like mist through his head, but as always, he could remember nothing of the shape and substance of it. He held himself still through habit, listening carefully. It was too dark, too quiet. He heard none of the familiar night sounds of other sleeping bodies close by, and a cold hook of apprehension clutched at his belly. Something was wrong. The chamber where he lay smelled damp and musty with an overlying stench of decay. Cautiously, he rolled onto his side. Pain struck his whole body at once, and he cried out with it. The bruises on his face and arms throbbed, and his left eye had swollen shut. The open cuts on his back left by the lash burned like the fury of Hellas. He fell back gasping to the cold stone floor. Nausea churned in his empty belly. He gagged and retched, then spit out a mouthful of bitter bile. He shuddered as he remembered why he was there, naked and alone in the dark. He remembered what would happen to him when morning came. Tears stung his eyes. Impatiently, angry with himself, he lifted one hand to scrub them away. This was no time for tears. He was almost 16, and a man, and tears were not for a man. He shivered again, almost a man. After they finished with him in the morning, if he still lived, he would be no man at all, and no chance ever to become one. And Rasa? Rasa, who had been meant as a gift to Lord Mendor's son Draken to mark his coming of age. Sudden visions flashed through his mind, the gleeful intensity in the faces of the house guards as they beat him, the hideous rapture on Draken's face as he bent over Rasa with a dagger in his hand, bright blood splashing on pale straw. Mouse bit his lip to suppress the cry that rose in his throat, and he lurched to his knees. Agony scythed through his chest as the broken ends of a rib grated against each other. He knelt there on the cold stones, chin on his chest, breathing in shallow gasps as he waited for the pain to subside. The urgent need for revenge formed under his heart. Anger grew in his belly, a hard knot of fury that pushed the pain and grief to one side. He huddled into himself, concentrated on the cuts on his back, on the swollen bruises on his face, his chest, his thighs. There was a trick or a gift he had discovered by sheerest accident when he was a child. If he withdrew into a far corner of himself and focused on visualizing his hurts as whole and healthy again, the pain vanished and the injury healed itself. But the trick was not without cost. When it worked, it left him limp and drained and exhausted for a day or two, barely able to drag himself around to attend to his duties. With relief, he found it worked this time. The stinging agony in his back and shoulders eased, the ache of the bruises faded. The swelling around his eye subsided, and he was able to open it. The stabbing pain of the broken rib abated. Then, even as the exhaustion of the effort began to creep through him, out of sheer desperation he tried something he had never done before. He concentrated on the muscles of his body, arms, shoulders, chest, back, legs, willing them to a strength beyond that of a 16-year-old boy, seeing them as hard and tough and useful as a fully trained warrior's in the peak of condition. Mouse got to his feet. All his life they had beaten him. They called him disobedient, obdurate, rebellious, obstinate. He could add mulish and bullheaded to that list. They had not been able to beat it out of him. They had never broken him as they had broken the other slaves. He wouldn't let them do it to him now. Fox Mouse, they called him, or just Mouse, because his hair was as red as the pelt of the little rodent. But he had seen the tiny rodent successfully fend off cats that threatened its young. If his namesake could defy enemies so much bigger and stronger than it, he could try to do no less. The tiny cell contained one unglazed window. It showed as a pale oblong in the dark stone of the wall. Two iron bars traversed it vertically. Even without the bars, it was too narrow for a grown man to climb through, but Mouse was not a grown man, not yet. Mouse went to the window and put his hands to the bars. Taking a deep breath, he began to pull. He strained until the muscles and sinews of his arms popped and stretched with the effort, but the bars remained stubbornly and firmly straight in their mortar bed. Gasping for breath, he let go. He thought about the house guards who had come for him in the dawn and dragged him to the pens where they castrated sheep, where they used the same filthy pinchers on troublesome slaves. He thought of them laughing as they left him to bleed to death or recover as best he could after the gentling. "No," he whispered, "not by all the gods. I won't let them do that to me." And he had to avenge Rossa. Cold rage flooded his belly, seeping through his body like oil into a wick. His muscles tightened, shivering with the intensity of his anger. He clenched his fists until his fingernails dug painfully into his palms. Mouse turned his back to the window and reached up above his shoulders to grasp the bars firmly. He used the entire weight of his body, the full strength of his anger and grief, the leverage of his hips against the stone. The effort caused bright sparks and whirls to dance before his eyes, and the blood roared in his ears. The rough stone ground cruelly into the naked flesh of his hips. Every muscle distended and strained and began to tear. He gritted his teeth hard enough to crack his jaw and pulled harder. The bars gave way so suddenly he staggered forward and sprawled full length onto his belly, cracking his forehead painfully into the opposite wall. Bright flashes exploded behind his eyelids. He shook his head, trying to clear it. It was a few moments until he could find the strength to sit up. He still held the two iron bars in his hands. The mortar, he thought fuzzily, it must have been old and rotten, weakened by years of exposure to the damp salt air. He got to his feet, then had to reach out to steady himself with one hand against the cold stone of the wall as another wave of dizziness and nausea washed over him. When he finally trusted his balance again, he went back to the window. Dawn was coming quickly. Already, a pale glimmer of light showed above the eastern wall of the landholding. Mouse dropped one of the iron bars to the floor and tossed the second out the window. It took him only seconds to scramble up to the broken sill. He took a deep breath, then expelled it to make himself as small as possible as he squeezed into the narrow opening. The rock frame scraped his skin raw, and he felt warm blood trickle down his back and chest. He bit his lip against the pain and strained harder. He popped through suddenly and tumbled to the packed earth below the window, knocking all the wind from his body. He lay there gasping for a moment, then groped around until he found the iron bar and scrambled to his feet. To his left, the back wall of the holding rose two man heights. Beyond that wall lay the river, a sheer, dizzying drop to the deceptively smooth water below. To his right lay the main gates, guarded day and night by Lord Mendor's most trusted house guards. Ahead of him, across an expanse of open courtyard, stood the stables and a hiding place. Limping, Mouse ran to the back wall. Roughly built of raw stone, it provided enough chinks to serve as hand and footholds. Tucking the iron bar under his arm, he swarmed quickly up the wall. At the top, he paused to look down at the dark, glimmering river and the swirling whirlpools that were plainly visible in the first light of dawn. No, not that way. Die one day, he undoubtedly would, but not now. Not that way, and not before he made a determined effort to avenge Rossa. He had no wish to drown in that turgid yellow water. He turned away, balancing carefully. He made his way along the narrow wall toward the stables. He was nearly to the stable roof when the reaction from the healing hit him. He stumbled, then caught himself barely in time to prevent himself tumbling off the wall into the river. He went awkwardly to his hands and knees. The sharp rocks dug cruelly into his flesh, drawing more blood. Cold sweat broke out on his forehead and chest, stinging in the raw abrasions. His body trembled with fatigue. He closed his eyes and clung desperately to the wall, fighting off dizziness. Finally, he crawled unsteadily the rest of the way to the stable, gripping the edge of the wall with a strength born of terror. Using very nearly the last of his stamina, he slithered under the eave of the thatched roof and fell heavily to the floor of the loft. Below, one of the horses snorted, startled.
Mouse had spent most of his life in the stable.
He knew it better than anyone else knew it, even the stable master. As a child, he had found secure places to hide from the stable master's wrath. One of those places was right there in the stable master's own stable, a small cleft in the thatching of the roof, barely large enough to conceal a full-grown man, but roomy and comfortable for the boy Mouse had been. He still fitted into the small hollow, but the fit was tighter now. Even in the thick gloom shrouding the loft, Mouse had no trouble finding the hiding place. He crawled up into it and wrapped himself in the old horse blanket he had stolen so many years ago. Trembling and shivering with exhaustion, he closed his eyes. Only sleep could replenish the strength and energy healing himself had cost. Once he was strong again, he would find a way to exact his revenge. His last conscious thought was of the dogs, but they would track him to the wall and think he had gone over into the river. Perhaps they would think him dead and not bother hunting any further. It was dark when Mouse awoke. He lay huddled in the old horse blanket, the iron bar cradled in his arms. He woke slowly, not moving, and listened intently without opening his eyes. A quiet murmur of voices came from the stable below. Mouse could not quite make out the words, but he recognized the voices of the
other two stable slaves.
The soft, unmistakable sounds of hay being tossed into feeder troughs and the quiet snuffles and snorts of feeding horses told him it was not long after the dinner hour. It would be at least 4 more hours until midnight when the stable master would retire, sending the two stable slaves to their beds before him. An hour after that, Mouse thought it might be safe to leave the stable. Every muscle of his body screamed in protest as he snuggled deeper into the blanket. Hunger gnawed at his belly and thirst raged in his throat, but he was used to that and could ignore it for a while longer. He closed his eyes and tried to think of a way to accomplish the revenge he needed more desperately than he needed to ease the hunger and thirst. A sudden shout from the stable startled him and he froze, hardly daring to breathe. A troop of horses clattered into the stable, their iron-shod hooves loudly on the polished stones of the floor. One of the dogs growled, then yelped as a hand cuffed it. "Hello, Greydad," the stable master cried. "Any sign of the lad?" Greydad swore. "None," he said. "We took the dogs along both banks of the river as far as the estuary. He's gone to the sea, is what. Drowned and dead. Good riddance is what I say." Mouse clutched the iron bar. His fingers tingled as the strength of his grip forced the blood out of his hands. They wouldn't be looking for him within the holding. He had time for his revenge. Greydad grunted.
"Lord Mendor wanted to see his balls roasted and fed to the pigs."
"'Twould barely appease young Lord Draken, though. He wanted the lass, but unsullied. He's mad enough to spit." "Let him spit," the stable master muttered. "Serve the little bastard right." Greydad chuckled. "You'd be well to guard your tongue, my friend," he said.
"That young whelp never forgets an insult and never lets one go without retaliation."
"Well, I can't say as I blame him about the lass. She was a choice morsel." "Oh, very choice indeed," Greydad laughed lewdly. Mouse squeezed his eyes shut against grief stronger and sharper than the pain of his abused muscles. Nothing would ever erase the stark images of the brutal use Greydad and the house guards made of Rossa. Nor would Mouse ever forget the appalling expression of ecstasy on Draken's face as he watched. Or how Draken looked when the men were done with Rossa, and he stepped forward, his dagger drawn. And when he was finished,
he casually told the guards to throw Rossa's body onto the dung heap behind the stables.
He discarded her as if she were nothing more than rubbish. Mouse set his teeth
into his lip
to bite back the moan of pain. Nothing but trash. Lying in bed with Rossa 2 nights ago, Mouse had told her he would die if it might prevent her having to go to Draken's bed. She had placed gentle fingers over his lips and shook her head. "I will go as I must," she whispered. "Nothing can prevent it."
"And I would not have you die for me. It's only your love that makes all this bearable."
"We could escape together," Mouse said eagerly. She shook her head. "No," she said. "We're slaves. We could never be anything but slaves. If they caught us, they'd kill us. It would be so much better if you could only accept the fact of your slavery, Mouse. I wish you could."
"As you have?"
"Yes, it's real. You can't wish away reality." We could go to Isgard, where nobody knows we're slaves. And how would we live? Again she put her fingertip to his lips. No, she said. Come, kiss me again. We haven't much longer. Don't waste the time talking of impossible dreams. I hate him, Mouse whispered fiercely against the softness of her hair. I hate Draken. Below, the stable master set the slaves to caring for the guard's horses. Mouse fell asleep again, his eyes stinging with unshed tears. When he awoke, there was no sound but for the quiet breathing of the horses. Carefully, he lowered himself down to the loft floor and crept to the ladder. He held the iron bar firmly tucked under his arm as he made his way down to the aisle between the box stalls. One of the horses, still awake, turned lazily to watch him as he stole past, but made no sound. Mouse paused at the stable door, peering out into the paddock. The full moon turned the yard into a place of pale, washed silver and hard black shadows. Nothing moved. He heard nothing but the soft sloughing of a gentle wind in the boughs of the fruit trees. No lights showed in the windows of the main house that bulked large against the star-splashed sky. He started across the yard toward the shelter of the laundry and ran full tilt into a man who stepped out of one of the privies next to the stables. The man grunted in pain and cried out as Mouse caromed off him to his knees in the packed dirt. Greydad! Oh, gods! It was Greydad! The guard captain recovered quickly from the winding Mouse had given him. You! He cried, staggering to his feet. Even as Greydad opened his mouth to shout for the guard, Mouse swung the iron bar.
It caught Greydad on the side of the head.
The sound it made was like dropping an overripe melon onto a stone floor. Mouse's belly contracted into a knot of revulsion as Greydad collapsed like an empty sack. Mouse caught Greydad by the heels, dragged him back to the privy, and shoved him inside. He dropped the bloody iron bar on top of the body and closed the door, then stood leaning against the unplaned wood, panting and listening hard. But nothing disturbed the silence. Nobody had heard Greydad's startled exclamation. Mouse darted across the yard to the laundry house. He needed something to cover his nakedness. Garments and bedding hung, some dry, some still damp, from lines strung across the back of the shed. Identifying articles only by touch, he found a shirt, a tunic, a pair of breeks, and a thick, warm woolen cloak. There was even a pair of boots, sent for cleaning and polishing, that fit reasonably well. Pleased, he dressed quickly. The clothing was loose in the waist and a little short in the arms and legs, but it would do. A short length of line wrapped twice around his waist served as a belt to keep the breeks from falling around his ankles. Fumbling in the dark along the shelf next to the huge washtubs, Mouse found a small leather bag containing flint, steel, and tinder, and shoved it into his shirt. He nearly knocked over a lamp as he groped further along the shelf, but snatched it up in time to prevent spilling the oil. He ran across the yard to the barracks, his belly quivering in excitement and rage. The muscles of his legs and back ached and burned at the exertion, but he did not stop running until he came to the wall of the barracks. Except for the two guards at the front gate and the few who stood guard within the main house, all the guards would now be asleep in the barracks. Mouse dropped to one knee and pulled the flint and steel from his shirt. The barracks was a long, low building, built of timber rather than stone. Within, rows of bunks lined the walls, providing little privacy for the guards, but far more comfort than afforded by the slave quarters only a short distance away. The roof was thatch and dry after a long, hot summer. Mouse's hands shook so badly he could not strike a spark from the flint. He sat back on his heels, rubbed his hands against his thighs, and clenched them into fists for a moment. Coldly, deliberately, he closed his eyes and thought about Rasa lying on the dunghill, discarded like a broken ewer. He thought about how her warm, silken flesh had taught him the glory of all the ways a man and a woman fit so delightfully together. She had given him the only love he had ever known. And in return he had eagerly and joyously given her all of his. He thought about how she had screamed and screamed and screamed at the brutal use the guards had made of her body before Draken released her to death. It was enough. Calm and steady now, he struck flame to the tinder and lit the lamp. He waited with patience until the wick caught fully and burned well. Then he stepped back and tossed the lamp up into the thatch. The thatch caught immediately. At first, only a small flame flickered in the straw and reeds, but as the oil spilled out of the lamp, the fire spread, slowly at first, then more quickly as it grew.
The slight breeze fanned it
as it fed on the dry thatch. Mouse heard a loud woof, and suddenly the whole roof exploded in one huge, bright burst of flame. Seconds later, the ancient dry timber caught, and flame engulfed the whole building. Mouse ran back and ducked behind the laundry shed. The door of the barracks burst open, and two or three half-naked guards stumbled out as the first startled shouts rose into the stillness of the night. Moments later, a man staggered out into the yard, his clothing burning like a torch. His bubbling screams rang loud, even over the roar of the flames as he fell and rolled feebly in the dirt. Mouse watched in grim satisfaction. "Burn, you louse-infested sons of whores and vermin," he muttered. "Burn and die in agony, and may maggots feast in your charred flesh. Hellas, take your black souls!" The roar of the fire and the shrieks of the dying guards roused the house servants and the slaves. Pandemonium erupted in the yard as men began running out to see what was wrong. Lights appeared in the windows of the manse. Lord Mendor leaned out of an upper window, shouting orders at the running figures in the yard. "Come down," Mouse whispered fiercely, the strength of his need knotting his fists. "Come down so I can kill you, you and that slimy maggot you call a son." But Mendor remained at the window, shouting orders. He did not come down. Mouse recognized the two guards from the front gates, trying to organize a bucket brigade to douse the blazing barracks. Watching the disorganized confusion in the yard, it occurred to him for the first time that he had a very real chance of escaping, that there was a possibility he could steal a horse and make a break for the gates. Dressed as he was in Draken's clothing, there was even the likelihood that he might not be recognized. In the dark, no one might notice the red of his hair that uniquely identified him. He saw the half-dressed stable master running with a bucket from the watering trough. That was all he needed. He turned and sprinted for the stable. The first box stall contained Lord Mendor's blooded stallion, the one called Strongheart, and the swiftest horse in the stable. Mouse opened the door to the stall, led Strongheart out, and guided him to the door of the tack-room. In a metal bracket on the tack-room wall, he found the torch, the end wrapped in pitch-soaked rags, and fumbled with the flint and steel. The torch sputtered and smoked, but gave enough light so that he could find what he needed in the black interior of the tack-room. Strongheart snorted and tossed his head as Mouse slipped the bridle over his ears. He held the horse firmly, gently scratched the long, aristocratic nose as he murmured soothing words. Strongheart submitted without further fuss and stood obediently docile while Mouse finished saddling him. Mouse grabbed the torch and turned for the door. As he led the horse out into the stable yard, Strongheart shied violently and laid his ears back at the sight and smell of the burning building. Men burned too. The stench of roasting charred meat blowing about on the wind knotted Mouse's belly with nausea and unexpectedly made his mouth water. A sudden shout made Mouse spin around. Draken and one of the stable slaves ran across the open ground toward the stable. Draken shouted again, drawing the dagger from his belt, and leaped at Mouse. Mouse used the only weapon he had. He swung the torch with a strength born of anger and desperation. The flaming end slammed into the side of Draken's head. Draken's hair burst into flame, and he fell while the young stable slave gaped in frozen shock. Mouse left Draken there, screaming in pain and clawing at his head, and pulled Strongheart into the open. He pointed the horse in the direction of the gates, which the guards had left wide open in their rush to see what the confusion was about. Seeking safety from the fire, the horse was already moving when Mouse vaulted up into the saddle and clung like a cockleburr as the horse's stride lengthened to a full gallop. A figure appeared out of the gloom ahead of Mouse, heart beating wildly in his chest. Mouse leaned closer to Strongheart's neck, determined to run down both horse and rider if he had to. But at the last moment, the stranger pulled his horse to the side of the track, allowing Mouse to pass unimpeded. Mouse had just time to get an impression of a big man wrapped in a brightly colored cloak, astride a big, dark horse, and a glimpse of hair turned to flame red by the reflected glow of the fire behind him. As Mouse swept past, he thought he heard the echo of laughter behind him. Mouse did not look back as Strongheart found the road and turned north toward Isgard.